Why do we struggle with the term sex addiction? Today on the Faithful and True Podcast. Welcome to the Faithful and True Podcast. We're back again today by popular demand. The phones have been ringing off the hook to get Elizabeth Griffin from the Faithful and True Counseling staff back on the podcast with us. So Greg and I have extended the invitation, and you were gracious enough to show up again for us today. Last time, Greg, we had a very, I thought, very engaging and interesting conversation about, is sex addiction a thing?
Mm-hmm.
And podcast seemed to fly by, and right. We've gotten good response to it. If you're joining us for the first time, whether it be the audio vision version of the podcast or our YouTube video version, we thank you for joining us. If you're on our YouTube Faithful and True channel, click on subscribe and then give us a like. We appreciate your support as we try to spread the good news of Christ and helping those that need our message of hope and guidance going through the rough waters that can come with unwanted sexual behaviors. So, Greg, welcome back again today.
Yeah. Well, and Elizabeth, it's great for you to be with us again. And like Randy said, we're going to continue our conversation about this idea, is sex addiction a thing? And the place I want to begin is this idea of what has been the relationship between the recovery community and sex addiction. Like, when did SA, you know, we're familiar with AA, the Alcoholics Anonymous, but in my own recovery, I was a part of an SA group, Sexaholics Anonymous. We have the white book, there are the 12 steps. So what has been the relationship of the recovery community to sex addiction, and has it been something that has been accepted there as far as an issue?
I definitely think that sex addiction within the recovery community to a large degree has been accepted. The first 12 step, and again, I think I have my history right, 12 step meeting for sex addiction was actually here in Minneapolis, and it was SAA.
Okay.
So they're different. There's SA, there's SAA, mm-hmm. there's SCA, there's SLAA. So there are a number of fellowships that have developed for 12-step sex addiction work. But I believe the first one was here in Minneapolis and was an SAA group. Now, it's kind of interesting. I do think the AA field had trouble in the beginning accepting sex addiction.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see some cartoons from the 80s and 90s where a person struggling with sex addiction would go to a 12-step AA meeting because there weren't
right.
you know, any SAA meetings to go to. And the person says, hello, my name is Bob, and I'm a sex addict. And he's in one side of the room, and everyone else is huddled in the corner over on the other side of the room. Because the other addictions haven't quite known what to make of sex addiction,
right.
especially in the 80s and 90s. I think now you certainly see people, Patrick Kearns talks about addiction interaction disorder. And so over time, people have seen the connection between drugs and sex addiction, food and sex addiction. Patrick always tells a story about, you know, he had a client one time, and it was a woman, and she had an eating disorder. And when she was acting out sexually, her weight would drop. When she would get her sex addiction under control, her weight mm-hmm. would increase. And so we have started to realize in the last 15 years that Pat always says addictions are like carrots. They come in bunches.
Right.
That oftentimes people just don't struggle with one addiction. They also struggle with another addiction.
Right. And in our population, it's primarily men who come from some sort of faith community. And so they have sex addiction, and the other two that we see would be food addiction, and the other one is workaholism.
Yes.
And so it's the very same principle. If I get one under control or start paying attention to one, the other one starts to get out of control.
So, you know, in the beginning of treating multiple addictions, I remember working in places I felt like I was always stamping out a fire. Mm-hmm. I'd get one addiction, you know, the client would get one addiction under control and you'd feel good about that. And then you'd look over and go, oh my goodness, you right. know? And so we have certainly seen that interplay. And I do think one of the things I love about Faithful and True is that, we are a program that looks underneath the addiction mm-hmm. to see what is the underlying foundation of whatever the addictive behavior right. may be.
Because the whatever is driving one addiction is driving
all. The other addiction.
Mm-hmm. So
yes.
if you get in there and start addressing the roots, what you're going to discover is then there will be less energy for all of the addictions.
Absolutely.
One of the things I would hear Mark talk about is you know, if you have multiple addictions, you start with the one that is going to kill you first, and that's where your energy goes. And the other thing that he would say is this idea of addressing the addictions individually, but also comprehensively, that I see them as a whole, but I also, if there's specific problematic behaviors, I have to go over after those behaviors individually.
Absolutely. So I have clients who walk in the door and it's clear they're alcoholics or drug addicts and they're actively using. That's not my specialty.
Right.
You know, and that does, even though it's still an addiction, that does require a specific skill set. And if they're actively using, I can't treat the sex addiction, even though that may be raging out of control too.
Right.
So I'll often send them to get sober. And then, you know, the place that I sent them to get sober will send them back for sex addiction mm-hmm. treatment.
That's a great question. That it made me think of a question that comes up all the time. And that is your definition of, when it comes to the sexual addiction field, the definition of sober. Mm-hmm. Because we'll use that phrase. And a lot of times we'll get questions about what does sober mean?
Right. Well, and in a broad sense, sobriety is when you are free from the problematic sexual behavior. Specifically here at Faithful and True, we have made that a little bit more specific using the terminology of lamp. So that when I'm lamp sober, that means I'm no longer lying. I'm not involved in some sort of adulterous relationship in all of its definitions. I'm not using masturbation and I'm also not using pornography. And you know, again, within the Christian community, there may be some conversations about whether or not masturbation is acceptable. But what we know is for someone who is struggling to maintain sobriety and control their sexual behavior, that masturbation can in itself be problematic. So it's not necessarily a conversation about morality. It's a conversation about what is helpful, what is practical. And so for us, when we're working with an addict, we would encourage them not to engage in masturbation because of the tendency it can have to lead to other things and open the door to those other behaviors that will be much more destructive. So one of the things I would also, you know, identify is Mark would talk about early on, he went to an AA meeting that he kind mm-hmm. of fit what you were talking about, where when he got out of treatment, there wasn't a lot of things that were available for him. And so he started going to an AA meeting. And then from that AA meeting, an SA meeting actually began. Mm-hmm. And my guess is over time that some of what has been experienced by people, and that was 35 years ago, so we right. do know that there's more of the SA available. And even within the context of the church, there's now life groups and Celebrate Recovery. So there are resources out there where on some level there's an acknowledgement that this is an issue.
Yes. I mean, I think we talked in the last podcast about the issue of some professionals not thinking it's an issue because it's not in the diagnostic manual. And what's been so interesting about the sex addiction field, when I train professionals, I always talk about this, whether you believe sex addiction exists or whether you think it should be caused something else, what has really resonated with people who struggle with whatever you want to call this issue or for an issue that doesn't exist has been sex addiction. Mm-hmm. And that has been what Patrick Carnes has really you know, his gift to people who've struggled with this issue is his model, more than any other model. I can say to a client, I can use hypersexuality, and they kind of look at me like, but I can say sex addiction, and that resonates.
Right.
So I feel like that as a professional, I need to look at what seems to be important to the people I work with, and what is a model that they feel connected to, because maybe I may feel connected to a totally different model, but I'm not the one struggling,
right. Yeah.
And I'm not the one coming for help. So I do believe that the sex addiction field has really in many ways been driven by people who struggle with the issue, because that has felt what works for them.
Right. And in some ways, the need and how it is talked about is what's been driving the issue.
Yes.
As soon as Patrick Carnes came out and started talking about sex addiction, and you could read a book and see your life described, and immediately you saw yourself in there. And so whether the professional had read the book or not, in fact, Mark Laser told the story of how he was working with a client prior to his exposure. And the client brought him one of Patrick Carnes' books. He read the first page and then put it on a shelf because he wasn't ready to read it yet.
Right.
And so it's that idea that when you start reading and it's described for you and you see yourself in it, that can be very threatening, but it can also be incredibly freeing because you realize you're not alone.
Very powerful. And so I do believe that it is the people who have struggled with this issue who, as you said, move the field to the point that finally professionals were like, well, maybe there is something here that we're missing because everyone's bringing me this book.
Right. No. And I think that we see that at Faithful and True. Someone has read Mark's book, Healing the Wounds of Sexual Addiction, or someone's read Deb's book, Shattered Vows, and immediately they find themselves in that book, and it becomes about, one, hope that there is a way forward, but it's that awakening, that realization of I'm not alone. And the nature of shame is it sends us into isolation. We do believe that we're the only one that struggles with this. And so there is a benefit to hearing others talk about it, for it to be acknowledged. You know, I often say if you want to change the culture of your church around this, then it needs to come from all voices, and it needs to be talked about in such a way that it's less shameful and it's more hopeful.
Exactly.
Well, this brings us to a good place to kind of talk about. So, you know, we see the benefit of talking about sex addiction, but we also know that there's some resistance out there to it. And the first thing I would say, we kind of talked about it in the last podcast, this idea of when people use addiction and any addiction for an excuse for their behavior, then the whole field of addiction kind of gets a bad name. It's seen as, you know, instead of it being helpful, it entraps people in a destructive behavior and excuses their behavior. So how would you help a family member or an addict, him or herself, to understand addiction is not an excuse?
I don't have a great answer for that. Well, not a short answer for
right,
that.
Yeah.
I think it's a process. You know, one of the first things that you brought up in the last podcast, which I thought was such a great analogy, if you grew up with an addict of any kind, and this is, you know, common, that oftentimes, right. you know, clients who struggle with addiction have grown up in families that struggle with addiction, that the role model you've seen is someone who's not taken responsibility. Because that, I don't think under the addictive disorders, that's not in the DSM, I'm pretty sure. But one of the earmarks of addiction is I can't take ownership of my own behavior.
Right.
That it's always about the alcohol or about you, you, you. And so I think that that is a journey for a lot of people. I think it is language that I start to use in the very beginning, that addiction is not about finding excuses. It's about that you engaged in the behavior and ownership, ownership, ownership. And so, but I don't think that happens just in one conversation with families or with an addict.
Right.
I think that, and for some, it does. You know, for some people, they walk in and they've already gotten past, like, they understand this is my problem.
Right.
I can't blame this on my wife. I can't blame this on my church or my religion. This is my problem.
So accountability is a big part of the recovery process.
Accountability is all of the recovery right. process, I think. Yeah. And until people take that first step, like to me, once if someone comes in and has taken that step, then we're halfway, you know, we're way down the road. Because that is the initial hurdle to jump, is taking ownership and responsibility. And I think it's many conversations. And right. I think some therapists are in, you know, like if people don't do that in the beginning, they're not good clients. Well, if they could do that in the beginning, they probably
right.
wouldn't be in my office. So I think sometimes we expect people to get over that hurdle very quickly. And I think especially if you come from a family that was your messages you got in your family and you, you know, have had years of acting out, that's a difficult and long journey to truly understand taking responsibility.
Right. Well, and even if there's not an addiction, you know, did you grow up in a family where people took responsibility for their choices?
Right.
You know, and a great way to measure that is, did people in your family apologize? Did you hear people say, you know what, I did that wrong. I'm responsible. I'm going to own that. And I want to apologize for my actions. And what we see is in a lot of families, maybe there's not an overt addiction, but there also wasn't a lot of ownership.
Ship.
And what we know is, the way I describe it, is blame and shame are on the same pendulum. Mm-hmm. And at one end of the pendulum is blame that says it's all your fault. And at the other end is shame, where it says, it's all my fault. But neither one of those are truth. And so the truth is what sets us free. So blame and shame holds us hostage. Mm-hmm. And one of the most difficult things to do, especially where there's been a lot of shame or a lot of blame or both, is begin to shift to that place of ownership that starts with the truth. And that brings us to kind of the second thing that causes people to be resistant, is that idea, that fear that if I own that I'm a sex addict, like, you know, we talked about an essay, you start the meeting, hi, my name is Greg, I'm a sex addict. There's so much fear that that's going to become my label, that's going to become my identity, that becomes all of who I am. And so we want people here to understand it's part of your story, it's not all of your story. You know, it's part of your truth, it's not all of your truth, and it will never be your value and identity, because that comes from God. And for many, that shame, that fear that this is going to become who I am, creates that resistance to being able to say it.
Well, I think oftentimes people who are addicts struggle with black and white thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to recognize that this is just part of who I am, is not the entirety, that there are parts I really regret and I've made bad choices, and mm-hmm. the ampersand,
right.
which we talk about at Faithful and True all the time, and I'm also a good man.
Right.
And I think it's hard. I mean, that takes a lot. In the literature, it's talked about as a psychological flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
And psychological flexibility is the earmark of psychological health.
Right.
And again, people walk in the door. I mean, when I walked into the door of my therapist, I was not the picture of psychological health, you know? So I had to learn those skills.
Right.
And so when people walk in the door and do that black and white shame, blame, good, bad,
right.
you know, that is the process of therapy to help them, you know, move toward that psychological flexibility and understanding the ampersand.
Right. Well, and that either or thinking, anytime we're in that, I'm either good or bad, I'm either in or out, I'm either right or wrong, that is always an attempt to create safety.
Right.
In fact, you know, one of the things that we can all struggle with is self-righteousness. And the way that I define self-righteousness is when I'm focused on all the things I haven't done versus truly owning the things that I have done. Well, again, self-righteousness is an attempt to create safety, because my belief is my truth is too unsafe. But if we can find a way, and it's through that both and theology mm-hmm. and thinking, that allows me to encompass all of the truth. You know, one of the things that we teach at the workshop is, if it's not the fullness of the truth, then it's not the truth. So if there's any part of the truth, either God's truth, the truth about God, the truth about you, the truth about yourself, any truth is missing, then it's not the fullness
full
of the truth.
Mm-hmm.
One other thing that I'd like to just talk about, and And I think this is another reason that people can be resistant to this idea of sex addiction. And that is the way that sex addiction is presented in the media. There was a time when you didn't hear anything about it. And then it seemed like there was a season when there were these kind of sex addiction was the butt of jokes, that it was used to be a humorous thing. It kind of downplayed the chaos and the way the media might have presented it, whether it was a sitcom or a movie. It was an excuse for behavior. And I think that what's true is when some difficulty, some pain is presented in a humorous way like that, it can create chaos about how to understand it.
Yes. I mean, everything you say is true. And it's unfortunate that I think sexuality as a whole gets so misportrayed mm-hmm. in media, and that sex addiction in particular, that is a soundbite. You know, right. And again, we're talking about a complex issue that is very painful for many, many people that has never really in the media, well, I probably shouldn't say never, that very rarely is portrayed as something that is serious, painful, shame-based.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it can get a quick laugh.
Right.
And I think, you know, in lots of media, it makes for the quick soundbite. It makes for the quick laugh. It makes for good TV to talk about right. it, but not to really talk about what's underneath it. You know, the behaviors we've all, you know, whenever we hear those politicians or those leaders who right. have done something that, you know, in the field we clearly, you know, we understand that it's more than a quick soundbite, that there's pain and history. And as we talked earlier, there's always that the roots of it.
Right.
That that is a story, but that's a story that's not a soundbite.
Right. Well, and I also, you have alluded to this idea that if you're exposed to any media now, on any given day, there's going to be someone who is exposed for having made difficult and painful choices in the area of sexuality, whether it's a leader, a politician, a actor or actress. But what we see is maybe we're so exposed to it that we now have this inability to really engage the complexity of the conversation. And I think there's also this part of us that we want things that are complex to be simple.
Yes.
And so there is a part of us that navigates that the most complex things and tries to simplify them. And I often say, if you try to take something complex and simplify it, you just look foolish. Another thing that I think is true is there, like you said, there are some attempts to really engage the complexity of the issue. There are some movies or TV shows that have really, I think, tried to present it in a more realistic way. But the challenge is, this is a fairly new field.
Yes.
That in the context of human development, even the conversation is not that old. And so it's not a language that we speak fluently in its complexity. And so if the only thing I know about it is what I'm getting from a sitcom, then it does make sense that I minimize it and see it as not a thing, as my son would say. But for those of us who every day are surrounded by people whose lives have been destroyed by these sexual choices, this unwanted sexual behavior, it's not something that we can easily laugh at because we see the pain behind the circumstances.
And again, to reference back to the field of alcoholism, I think we're about 20, 25 years behind that field.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you think back to what we saw on TV around people who drank, you know, it was often in the early days made fun of mm-hmm. or the town drunk,
right.
you know. And so I do think we will get there.
Right.
But I think it is a process. And I do think, you know, for a lot of us, you know, me included sometimes, if I make something simple, it feels like I don't have to deal with it.
Right.
You know, when I start to unpack it, it becomes complicated and a mess and there are no easy answers. And that doesn't feel good sometimes.
Right.
And so it's just much easier to put it in a little box. But I do think we're making progress. Mm-hmm. You know, I do think now that people do have resources and people can find help, which is certainly different than it was 20, 25 years ago when Mark had to go to an AA meeting.
Right.
And so I do think we're making progress, but we certainly aren't where we all hope we'll be someday. Right.
She inadvertently did it again. She brought us to the end with the perfect statement, because we want to reach out and offer that help and that hope that you may be looking for today. And we appreciate you taking the time to listen, to watch, and to hopefully benefit from our podcast. Again, we're going to cordially invite you to like us on our YouTube channel. Subscribe, if you would, please. Click on the like. We really appreciate that. And we hope that the volume of material that we have available on the Faithful and True website can be of benefit to you and support to you. We also invite you, if you're hearing this message and going, I need that level of help, I need that level of understanding, please take a look at our Men of Valor workshop. We also, 2 and 3 times a year, do a workshop for the wives called the Women's Journey Workshop. And once we get through these unprecedented times, we'll get back to being able to offer these workshops in person. In the meantime, we're offering them virtually, and Greg leads the way there with the Men of Valor Workshop via our professional level of Zoom. So until we join you again, Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us on Back-to-Back Podcasts. And we hope that you can join us again soon, because you bring great insight and experience to share with our audience. We really appreciate you for that. And Greg, we always appreciate
you.
Thank you for showing up today, as usual, because the audience does not want to watch me for 30 minutes. So until we join you again next week, thank you very much for joining us. We hope that this coming week for you is going to be a week that's filled with many blessings and great visions.